tonight. Because these numbers are, you know, we're close. We're close. It's close to being something I can vote for, but what we're not accounting for is we have two pieces of equipment that we're planning to purchase in the highway for next year and the year after that we will have zero money available for if we don't figure out how to address that. So I'm tired tonight, and we still have more of an agenda to get through. So I don't want to have that conversation tonight, though. But we have to have it.
Confused as to if you have 101% increase in the town expenditures, and there was less than that in the highway expenditures, why are we coming out with 103.8?
There's less income. Less non-tax income.
Okay.
Am I right, Neil?
Yeah, I'm getting to it. Revenues. Oh. We'll have to check that. Oh, your budget last year, you used more money to probably it's the extra money that you used to from the unobligated fund balance.
Right.
That's a difference, I think, of $40,000 maybe. Yeah. Last year, I think you did 86,000. This year we only have 45. So that's 40,000 difference right there in the quote income. Although it's not technically income, but it reduces the budget. Right. That's probably the difference. I will go over all of this with Ben one more time to make sure that what I'm putting on the screen at that 3.8% increase is correct, but I think it is.
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of with Scott at this point. Need a little time to marinate on it, and we can come back at it next week.
Okay.
Yeah, we're close.
Okay, next on the agenda is on-demand generator, garage. I asked Jimmy to pursue getting some kind of ideas to what that might cost to get an on-demand generator and wire it up. Jimmy, are you still here?
Yeah, I am. Actually, I reached out to, I know I reached out to that company that Kevin Rice had mentioned about, that he was kind of iffy on.
Vermont generator?
Brookfield, is it? Yeah. And they're coming the 22nd to give us a quote on a generator and the hookup and all. I have reached out to Vermont Generator. They right now really aren't doing much with quotes, but she called me back and said that she was going to speak to, I can't remember the fellow's name, and have him call me and see if he could sneak in and give us a quote on it. And I am still waiting to hear back from him on that as well. So as of right now, the 22nd, I've got somebody coming in to give me a price that works for me, but that's it so far.
Okay. So, but that would have no effect on the budget other than to reduce the amount in the building reserve. It was the board's desire in that regard, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Winter road policy.
Did people get a chance to read either the the draft that I had started a while ago or the states.
I did not get very far on either one. I did, however, speak to Jimmy regarding salt usage, and he and I had a discussion. And we're hopeful with these new trucks that we can get one of those calibrated to use less salt with a new system and slides that work properly and everything clean as a whistle and properly maintained, that we could get a decent calibration rate to try and get a handle on salt usage, which I think, John, was your major concern. And
that's my overall biggest concern. I think we could do some other updating to the plan, which would give some guidance for Jimmy and the crew, which would also give Jimmy and the crew some teeth when taxpayers start berating them and or the select board of road conditions. It just would help lay out a clear plan and why. So when people approach them or us, that there's something to back that up with.
I looked it over some. My concern is, and I believe it was in the captions, and I guess to start it off is, you know, we've got a mixed variety of residents. We got an aging population, and we still got a large working class population. And like with the wording, which I understand that can be changed and not a big deal. But when we put in the salt, our sand usage, we're going to use it conservatively. I don't like that wording. 24 hours after a storm, being in that business, there's just, you can't do that. I mean, people have to get out and go to work. When it's really cold, it's not as slippery. I understand that.
The reason why things like that are in there, it's not saying that it won't be done until then. It's to cover the town's ass.
But when you put it as policy, that's...
It doesn't say anywhere in there that roads will not be sanded for 24 hours. What it does is sets an expectation. There are going to be times when... there will not be sand applied to the roads within 24 hours following the storm. It's going to happen. If you get a really big storm and those guys are out for 20 hours straight, they're not going to turn around and do another 8 hours of sanding. It's just not going to happen. And it takes, you know, more than a couple hours to do it. So they're going to go home, get a few hours of sleep, and by the time they get finished, it might very well be 24 hours from the last time they plowed.
Right. Well, it's like I said, some of it I think is refining the wording so it's clear. But, you know, this the one that really bothered me, or the two that bothered me, is the conservatively in the wording on the sand usage. I think this was unofficially attempted 3 or 4 years ago when we had a different road commissioner in place, and it's unacceptable to do that. I mean, we've got an obligation for safe roads, and I feel that I have, you know, the best equipment that you can get and tires and all that. And when I come down a back road and slide out into the blacktop, that's unacceptable. And then it said the salt usage, we were only going to use it after the storm. When I talked to folks at the state, they salt every time they plow.
I don't know if it says only after the storm. I would have to.
Like I said, I'm just saying I'm being technical in what I found in the wording. It just when we have taxpayers and we're a connector route here to the interstate, and when we're asking our taxpayers and they're you know, giving us new trucks and new equipment, we got to make sure that they can get out and get to work safely.
I don't disagree with any of that, but what is the purpose of having our roads bare and dry when you go in any other direction and they're not? In my opinion, we are overdoing it at times. We have closer to a bare roads, a unwritten bare roads policy than we do a safe roads policy, even though there's nothing that's actually written.
The only thing I can honestly say about it all, if I was to go by the state and how the state treats their roads, Monday we had a little bit of a snowstorm, a snow squall that came through town. I happened to leave work. It was 31 degrees. I said, no, everybody will be good. There's water on the road. I had to go down to Judy's Evergreen there recycling right after work. So I headed down. I came on to a state truck putting salt out on Route 14. I came on to a state truck putting salt out on Route 5. And I came out onto another one on Route 5. that's where... I mean, if we're going to have something that you want me to follow by, and let's say if we use the state as a guideline, I would have been out there putting out salt that day, which to me, in my mind, that was unneeded. That was uncalled for. But it must be what their policy or however they were out doing that. And as it was, I woke up in the morning, and yeah, when I went to bed that night at 9:30, our roads were still pretty wet, and it was wet, but they didn't ice up. And I got up in the morning, and they were bone dry. So I see that right there. They wasted a pile of tax dollar money doing what they were doing by going by their policy.
I completely agree with you, Jimmy. You know, there is always going, you know, you're going to have a policy and then that's going to be left for the people that are following it to interpret it. And that doesn't mean that there isn't leeway to within it. any one policy. I mean, I would hate to, you know, see you out putting salt down if you didn't think it was needed. You know, it's also easier for, I think, you, Jimmy, or the town, or the town crew, or whoever, you know, when you're in a town, your geographic area is much smaller than when you're in the state. They cover a much bigger area, which means they've got more typically more elevation change as well. So I mean, you know, it's never going to be perfect, that's for sure, by any means. So
I really don't think that the state has much different elevation differences than we do here. It can be perfectly fine down at Tego, and Chuck has got a bare road and no snow at all. Right. And then you get up to the town garage and it started to snow. And then you get up by the town hall and you've got 3 or 4 inches up there, and you've got 3 or 4 inches up on top of Howe Hill and up on top of Webster Hill and Skyline and some of these other up on Cloudland. And so we're dealing with 3 different elevations and 3 different scenarios. And a policy, if you're going to give definitive labels to when you go out, then you've got to take that into consideration, because those people that come down off of Howe Hill and they slide down that hill because it's glassed over, and yet down there at Chuck's it's great, aren't going to be very happy when they hit those guardrails.
So where is there definitive language in there that says nobody's going to go out if it's only snowing in South Pomfret, but it might be snowing at the top of Howe Hill?
What I think you have to be careful of is putting in definitive language that does not allow for judgment and or road conditions in the various locations in town. And you know, a bare roads policy down in South Pomfret would be an easy thing to manage. But if you get up at the town hall, it's going to be a whole different game. And so, you know, yeah, I don't like to see excessive salt usage either, but I don't want to see people over the bank because it glasses over and we don't go out. And so there, it's a real fine line. And I can, and I don't know what, I'm sure you were on the board as well, John, when every single morning we got those emails that said, you know, it was treacherous down through the Gulf and it had frozen up down there. And I'm guessing it probably was. And so not having gotten those kind of emails indicates to me that at least we're keeping the roads safe. They may not be clear, but at least they're safe. And I think that should be the goal.
So what are we saying? So either propose some changes or just say what's here is pointless, I guess. And nobody's coming up with, all I'm hearing is anecdotal. What's there is saying that we're not going to go plow at the top of Howe Hill if it's not snowing in South Pomfret, because that's what I'm hearing.
I think what I'm saying is what I read, I think we need to be very careful in how we word it. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm in agreeance that where we can, and I think with these new vehicles and the systems in them and stuff, that we're going to address the salt usage, and Jimmy's conscious of it. Some of the salt being heavy in places is because the tailgates on these older trucks are sprung and the bodies are getting rotted. There's holes in them in places. So it's running out when it shouldn't be running out. And I'm in agreement, you know, don't over salt if we don't need to, but there's also a fine line there where if we don't apply it accordingly, we're going to have the guys out on overtime putting more on because it wasn't done correctly. So, and what I heard at town meeting last year was nothing but praise for the highway crew. So I didn't see any emails with complaints.
Does that mean if residents feel we should plow three times as often as we do, we should just do that? I mean,
they're the ones paying the bill.
Yeah, you got to remember, 100 people vote out of 900 residents. You can't just.
But everybody has the opportunity.
Yeah, that's a whole nother discussion, and I'm not going to get into it. So, I mean, if people want to propose some changes to it, great. Otherwise,
we'll move on. John, the only suggestion I had, which is. A similar suggestion I had a lot, well, not with these recent edits, but I don't know if it makes sense to do this, but what I've seen in other towns' winter policy is that they actually identify the roads that are part of the major routes for business and school, you know, the heavily trafficked areas. And naming kind of those areas as this is our first priority. This is what we're going to take care of, you know, when the big storm hits. This is what our priority will be. After that, here's our next priority. And, you know, just kind of laying all that out. And I don't know if it makes sense to attempt to do that, but it does kind of speak to the issue you raised, because it's a similar issue that I think we talked about whenever it was that I do agree with you. Right now, we kind of have a one size fits all policy. And maybe it could be tailored a little bit to make sure that we distinguish between what areas of town and what roads really are the highest priority, because as Steve said, they're important for people getting to work. And schools and so forth versus, you know, the less traveled roads.
Jim here. Hey,
we sort of understand that already. I mean, we might not have a policy, but we certainly know what the most important roads are. And, you know, that's, it's very obvious. It's the paved roads, you know, the Pomfret Road, the stage, the Pomfret Road, particularly in front of my house, and the stage road, and Howe Hill Road. Very clear?
It's not in here. It's not in our current, but I mean, it's kind of the right now, the main roads, the paved roads are essentially those roads that get the extra attention. They get plowed, you know, probably 2 to 3 times as often as the back roads do in any given storm. In one of the winter maintenance classes I took, they kind of discouraged making priority routes beyond that, because it's always going to lead to, well, hey, I have to be at work at 6. I'm a doctor, so my road's more important than your road.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
It's really got to come down to what makes the most sense to the crew to get them all done with the people they have in the fastest manner. You can't run down to Sessions Meadow to plow Run Road and then run over to Wild Apple and then go over to North Pomfret to do another to make 3 people that have to be to work at 4 o'clock in the morning happy. I mean, the whole point of winter, anytime there's a winter event, it's quote unquote an emergency operation. Roads are never going to be in the condition that one would expect them to be in on a Wednesday, 25 degree sunny afternoon that hasn't had precipitation in 2 days. The purpose of part of this is people have to understand if they want to go out at midnight on a Sunday in the middle of a snowstorm with their two-wheel drive vehicles with summer tires on it is not the time, nor should we be providing a service for that person to be able to do that. It's, we can't just go out and make everything optimal for everybody when they want it. Yes, roads should be better during the day, but during active events, people have got to understand there is only so much to expect. Roads are far better off now than they were 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And so what are people going to expect 30 years from now? They're going to expect a bare and dry in the middle of a 2-foot snowstorm. And, you know, where does that end? How much can we provide? We can't do it all. There has to be a baseline of how to do it and what the expectations are. This, you know, it's been mentioned in this conversation already tonight about this, that, you know, this started with Frank. Frank had nothing to do with this. Everything that's in here is from me. When I worked on the town, from things that I saw, largely this document is from another town. I don't remember which one because it's been too long, but from another town in Vermont. You know, there are winter maintenance policies out there that are 20 pages long. This one tries to condense it into 3. It doesn't say anything in here that salt applications won't be done until after the storm. So I'm not sure where that came from.
It was in the email when you emailed it to me, the winter maintenance policy. You may have updated it since then. I haven't seen one since you sent it a week and a half ago. Maybe 2 weeks ago.
I haven't done any work on it since 2 years ago, so...
It says in there that you were going to salt after the storm. Sanding it's 24 hours after a storm. And like I said, some of it is just a matter of changing some wording is the only thing that I'm kind of...
What it says in here is sand is utilized is to obtain the goal of safe travel and gravel roads following a storm. Generally, sand is applied up to 24 hours after the conclusion of plowing operations. So like I said, if the guys are out for 16 hours straight plowing, they should not be allowed to turn around and sand. even if they want to, in my opinion, they should not be allowed to turn around and sand. Now, there are going to be exceptions to that. If you know, you get one of those right temperature storms where the ground's warm and you plow it off and it turns to a sheet of ice, there might be times when that might have to happen. So I wouldn't put in there that it would be absolutely prohibited, and it's not in there at all, but they should be encouraged strongly to go home and get some sleep. So if that's 6-8 hours off, they come back, by the time you get done sanding, like I said, it might very well be 24 hours. I mean, this is right out of from another town.
My only thing that I would say to that, and I fully agree with that, John, 100%. The only thing that I do weigh on in my mind at times, because it's happened to me in the past, is if I have a chance to come back, turn right back around and come in there and sand them roads when it's dark out, I'm a lot more comfortable when them roads are in a slippery, bad condition than I am doing it during daylight hours when everybody and their brother's out on them roads.
Oh, it's much nicer being out there when nobody's there. And I agree. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You know, I said, I probably went a little far with what I was saying. You know, it really should be left up to you, but there is also in here, you know, the hours of service where, I mean, you know, 10 to 3, there's not going to be anybody on the road. Well, you know, if that's the heaviest point of snowing, you might very well be out there. But if it's a prolonged event, people that are out driving around can't expect a nice plowed road during those hours. But, you know, it's put in there to encourage the crew to go home and get some sleep. You know, the state doesn't, you know, I think it's 16 hours and, you know, they go home and get a few hours. You can't, if it's in there and then you do that, you're covered. If it's not in there, then there's ambiguity of, well, I couldn't get up my road. There's, you know, 6 inches of snow on it. Shouldn't they have been out here plowing? No, they're not out here plowing, and this is why.
Well, I do think that there is a certain amount of responsibility that individuals that live here have to assume. If you live in a rural community and you get a 2-foot snowstorm, you're going to have to assume that if you try and go somewhere, you probably either will get stuck or you won't even get out of your driveway. And there's got to be some common sense. From the individuals that live here, I think that we have a tremendous road crew. I think they do a great job. On occasions when the snow is coming down an inch or two an hour, they back off and they say, okay, we're going to let the back roads just sit here. And we're going to try and keep the main roads open because we don't have enough personnel to keep everything open. And if people don't recognize that live here, then I will be the first one to go to bat and explain that just what did you expect when you moved into a climate such as this, when these things happen. The crew does a great job. And yes, maybe we have to have these things spelled out in a policy, but it's got to be written very carefully. And quite frankly, I have not read this carefully enough to pick it apart with a fine-tooth comb, because I think we've got a budget to deal with, and then we can deal with the winter road policy. And there's only so many hours in the day that I'm willing to devote to this job that, if things were going really badly on the road, I guess I would be more concerned about the winter road policy, because I think that we've got a crew that is making fairly good judgment calls and we're not getting complaints and the roads are getting plowed, they're getting sanded. And I'll be honest, there was a few days ago when it was a minor snowstorm, but it got icy. And the road crew sanded, and the policy might not have said for them to do that, but I was really glad that they did, because it was glassy. And so you kind of got to trust your crew a little bit.
I mean, there's zero stipulations in here of telling them when it needs to be sanded. Most of what really comes down to being in here is is guidelines is for the people of the town as much as it is for the road crew. There's nothing in here that says this has to be done here and it can't be done there. I would encourage people to read it over again.
Where I saw that, John, for clarification, is in sand application. Sand is applied up to 24 hours after the conclusion of plowing snow. It will be used conservatively to restore safe travel. The word conservatively is like I said, most of what I've read through here is just some of it's just a little bit of wording. I'm not saying I'm finding fault with the whole entire policy or anything like that. I'm just
why don't we do this just to try and move things along? Because I think it's a valuable effort here, but maybe John, I think you said this earlier. Why don't we just everybody kind of highlight the parts that maybe they have some trouble with and then let's come back to it next time.
Yeah. All right. Spending way more time on this than we need to. I like that idea. I mean, using words like conservatively, so that only an amount sufficient to restore safe travel conditions. I mean, it's covering your butt. If you change, I mean, you can take it out so it's not in there. It leaves it a little more ambiguous. You know, or you say, let them know that we're really doing a good job, so we're going to put liberal in there. You know, now you're opening yourself up to, you know, it's letting people know that what's being done. We're not going to go above and beyond just because somebody thinks that they need more sand on their road because of XYZ factors.
Well, I think
that's going to happen.
Great idea. Let's revisit that at the next time. And we've still got 3 or 4 items to go through here. And hopefully we can get done before the clock turns to midnight.
Can I just ask a question? Sorry, my hand was raised.
I'm sorry, I can't see your hand. I apologize.
That's okay. I just want to know, so the trucks now, because they're all so old and broken down, you can't adjust the salt? Is that what's being said?
I'm saying Jimmy and I had the discussion that because of wear and tear and the slides getting worn, that with these 2 new trucks that are coming on board, we decided we would make a concerted effort to get those calibrated. The chains will be running, the wheels will be running, everything should be going well because it hasn't had a chance to corrode and deteriorate and or break, and we will have a real good chance of getting those 2 trucks calibrated so that we can use one of those to do the salt applications and have a calibrated piece of equipment so we know how many pounds per, how many feet, miles, whatever it is that we're putting on, and so that we can get a handle on this calibration. When you take stuff that's 7 years old and corroded, and the chains are old, and the wheels that run them are old, it's going to be difficult to get a real good calibration anyway.
Okay, and when does the new truck come?
One's coming, Jimmy's hoping to pick it up on Friday.
Yeah, there'll be one here Friday. My intention is that one's gonna live out on the back road. Mine will live on the blacktop. Mine will probably be here in the middle of January.
So I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. The one that's coming isn't going on the blacktop or is going on the blacktop?
The first one that's coming will be here Friday, possibly Monday if the roads are real bad and they don't make it up to get them. And then the second one will be here in the middle of January. And that's the one that'll be on the blacktop.
Okay, and there's no adjusting to the ones that are here now?
Well, like I said earlier in the meeting, which you may not have been here for, I mean, like now the inner dump that pushes the product over to the feed chain, there's wear in there, so it allows salt to escape out. The tailgates are bent, so it falls out the back, even when you're just driving down the road trying not to apply any salt. So it's just they're old trucks and fatigue and.
Okay, I just wanted to understand. I'm not just wanted to be clear because I don't see the trucks. I was just wanted to know what was going on.
Yep.
To put it in a little bit of perspective for you, Kathy, last year, my very first time out putting salt out was in the dark. First load of salt I ever put on a truck. By the time I got down to the Harden place down across the Pop-Up School and I headed on that south end of town, I was just about empty. I said, what's going on here? I had no idea that that tailgate on that truck was sprung so bad that I lost all my salt right out of the back of that.
Okay.
And so we've been dealing with that. And then when you go to raise the side dump up on all of them, just as quick as you do, the way the bodies have been sprung inside there by using the excavator and them pulling stuff around, they have tweaked that. So every time you go and pick that body in or dump up, it loses a pile of it from the inner body coming up in the regular body. It just spews right out, comes right out. And I've got rubbers all bolted onto the tailgates and extra rubbers here and there on all them up to two trucks right now. And just to make sure that that does not keep happening, it still happens.
Okay, and we know how this happened, so this won't happen to the new trucks? I got a pretty good
idea how it's happening. Yep, they've been digging out of these trucks with an excavator. Which is
okay.
No.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Okay. So we're going to now move on to charitable donation allocation. And not to belabor this thing, is there any chance that we can come to some agreement as to whether we want to call this donation from Kathleen Dolan, whether we want to consider that to go into a reserve fund or whether we would want to consider that to go into a donated fund, such as what John Moore was talking about, that would be overseen by the trustees of public funds, so that we might encourage more donations to that amount of money.
As a technical question, I don't really totally understand private funds that the I'm not even sure private funds is the right term, but funds that are not reserve funds created by voters. Can the trustees of public funds?
This is the deal. This money is not generated by tax dollars.
I understand this, but they can be put into a reserve fund.
This money is a donation. And so as such, we can put it into a fund such as the Town Hall Fund, the Moore Fund. We can allocate it to a fund with a name, and we can allow the trustees to manage that fund and get more return for our dollar. We can't do that with tax money.
That wasn't my question, Emily. I'm the question I'm asking is, are we talking about a specific fund that will never, ever, ever, ever get intermingled with tax money, and therefore it doesn't need to be a reserve fund? Or, you know, I'm just trying to understand, are we just talking about inventing a fund that doesn't need to be approved by voters, and the trustees of public funds manage that fund? And if that's the case, I mean, there has to be somewhere in there, there's a process, and I honestly don't know what the process is, whether this is something that the select board, I know the select board, if it's a voter reserve fund, we obviously would have to warn an article for that. But if it's some other kind of fund, I don't really understand what the process is to create that. Do the trustees get to create that on their own? Do we the board, the select board, doesn't really have, as far as I know, any power to create a fund.
I don't know whether Ben is still here or John is still here, but
I know what the language said.
We can, as a select board, we can apportion that donation any way we see fit. We can use half of it to augment the tax income that would have been generated had Ms. Dolan not asked for tax exempt status for the amount of property that she received it for, or we can use it all to reduce taxes. It was, in my view anyway, and I could be wrong, but we can, because of the language in that document, we can use that for any purpose that we deem appropriate given the language that was in that document. So we can use half of that money to augment tax income as if she were still paying taxes. And we had expressed a desire to do something above and beyond with the half of the money that she is donating each year to put in a fund that would augment things that we could do. For instance, John mentioned in South Pomfret, it may not be an idea that the whole body would like to go into. I find the fact that because it's a charitable donation and we can grow more income with it because it is that, and we can let the trustees oversee that, I think that's far more advantageous to having a reserve fund where we can't grow it, and there's less likelihood that anyone else would donate toward a fund such as that. In other words, we have an opportunity to create a fund that other people in the town might wish to donate to, just as the person that goes through the Weschler Foundation or whatever they do to donate to that Dorothy Moore Fund. We have an opportunity here to create something that other people that have a desire to donate to might be willing to do that. And I think that's an opportunity that is hard to turn down, because we have an opportunity. It's a donation. It doesn't have to go into tax dollars. It isn't tax dollars. It's a donation.
Right. But that all sounds good. But the question, I come back to the original question I'm trying to ask, which is, if it's not going into a voter created reserve fund, what is the process for creating some other kind of fund that the trustees would manage? Because I don't know. I really don't know the answer.
I can find that out. I guess I'm not sure. I don't think I understood your question completely, but I will have an answer for you before the next meeting.
Yeah, to me, that's the critical question, is what's the process?
So here's the question I have. The Moore Fund, Emily, the Moore Fund was established by the Moore family, obviously, right, and probably was not established by the select board. That was a fund that you and your family set up.
Right.
And the select board is, I assume, not really involved in that fund.
Right.
You set it up and turned the trusteeship of it over to the trustees of public funds, correct?
Right. Well, go ahead, John.
I think that fund was, there's a letter that I set up and how that was to be invested and so forth. But I believe the select board has the discretion on what that fund is to be used for. And the trustees of the public fund only administer the allocation and how to invest it in equities and fixed income, and what portion is in equities and what portion is in fixed income. is my feeling on what you would do with this fund if you decide to set one up with the money, half of the money that comes in from Kathleen. You have full discretion of it. So you would write up something from the select board that the trustees of the public funds would invest that, and you might give them some suggestion on how much, what percentage to be in equities and what percentage in fixed income, and that you will let them know from time to time where and when you want to spend that. So I think one of the things you might consider doing is tonight maybe decide if you're going to put it in the reserve fund or try to put it in the trustees of the public funds. But Ben Brickner and I have been texting back and forth a little bit, and Ben had a good comment, and perhaps the what you name that might be for a further discussion when perhaps Marge Wakefield can get involved, and Ben, and he had a thought maybe it is that it might be called something about the future of Pomfret, or maybe it's something to do with, which John Peters mentioned, something to do specifically for South Pomfret, but it might be, it, Ben was thinking it might be more of an open-ended a thought as to the future of Pomfret. But maybe tonight you could make, if you can make up your mind for anything, it might be where to pigeonhole it, and then for another discussion, and I'll be happy to draft up some suggestions on what you might do to how you might write some language to the trustees of the public funds.
The reason I had come up with the South Pomfret pedestrian traffic or even car traffic was because she was given 200% of basically what the town was getting prior from her, and we had kept half of that. So essentially we were losing no tax revenue from her. And because of everything that's gone on in South Pomfret in the last 5 years, as large the increase in people down there has largely been due to artistry, which I think is great. And I see no negative sides to it whatsoever personally, except for especially in the winter time when the snowbanks are there, which is why I suggested using the entirety of the half of what she's giving, or $10,000, to go into that fund on a yearly basis for improving that down there.
Yeah, you could have something, John, that might say something about to be used but not limited to the South Pomfret area, so that in 15 years from now you might have that pretty much a Taj Mahal, and maybe you want the money to go somewhere else. So you may want to not limit it specifically to that forever.
What I'm asking though is can Kathleen, for instance, say, since half of what she's sending us is a charitable donation, can she say how she would like it to be used? Can she say, I would like this money to be used to establish a fund to be administered by the trustees? I mean, is it something that select board does or the individual does?
The way I'm reading it, it's a little bit confusing actually, because it's pretty wide open in the agreement, but there is also, I'm not sure if it's conflicting or not, but there is a statement in the agreement that says, whereas the town and donor wish to enter into an agreement by which the donor will make recurring charitable donations to the town in support of the services available or provided to artistry. Which could be read pretty broadly, but then there's the other language that says basically it can go into any fund dispersed by any purpose as the town select board directs. Okay. So there's some language we probably need to do some language clarification, because the way I read this is that it's a little bit more technical reading, but it actually seems to me that I don't really fully understand the select board's role when it comes to deciding what to do with a donation that hasn't been specifically designated for a particular purpose. Like, is that the select board's role to decide what to do with those kinds of donations? I don't really know that. I don't know if it's the treasurer's decision or the trustees of public fund, you know, their decision. But
or the donor's decision.
Or the donor's decision. Well, and the donor may not decide, but I'm saying if the donor hasn't decided, then who decides? And I'm not sure it's the select board, but the
can we have Ben, because he was part of that document, he was the instrument of that document. Can Ben, can you weigh in as to how you read that and what your initial thoughts were when we went down to see Kathleen and we negotiated that document?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. To Scott's point, there, you know, if you read the language there, you could read a conflict between the two sections that Scott read off. But generally speaking, recitals, the whereas clauses, have no legal effect. It's everything that comes after is really the legal contract. The recitals are just explanatory. The reason the recitals read the way they do, however, is because generally speaking, to have a binding two-way contract, each party needs to give the other one something of value. And since this is really a voluntary donation by Ms. Dolan, the town's not giving her anything new in exchange, one could argue. And so we wanted to be, in the drafting of the recitals, we wanted to make it pretty clear that she was getting something from the town, continued services. Artistry obviously is very active in town and requires a lot of time and attention from town officials. So we wanted to carefully tie together what the mutual exchange was, and that's why the recitals were written the way they were. That said, when Emily and I negotiated this with Ms. Dolan and later her representatives, there was never any discussion that she would guide or direct how the funds were used. And that's why the other language that Scott read was written the way it is, namely that the amount will be deposited in any account of the town and can be spent for any purpose that the select board directs. There was no intention that Ms. Dolan would have any say in guiding how the funds were used once they were given to the town.
Hey, Ben, when you guys drafted this, was this one sentence meant to be that the select board not only decides what fund it goes to, but also decides how it's spent? Or is there a check and balance where somebody else decides what fund it goes in, and then the select board has the discretion to spend it out of that fund when the time comes?
You know, I don't know that our thinking on that, the mechanics were quite that sophisticated. My recollection is that the any account was really allowing the town treasurer to deposit the check wherever was appropriate or made the most sense, but that the purpose to which the funds were dedicated would be a policy decision made by the elected representatives of the town, the select board.
Yeah, because that sounds better to me, because that's the traditional check and balance on these things, is that one group or one person makes the decisions about putting it in, and then another group decides how to take it out. And so if what you described is accurate, that would be up to Ellen's discretion to decide what fund it goes in. And then when the time comes to spend it, that's a select board decision.
I think that's a fair interpretation.
So that's, we can establish a fund if we want, and we can call it the Dolan Fund or whatever we might.
So can we make a decision as to whether this wants to go into a fund or a reserve fund?
Well, I move that we put the money into a fund.
I agree with that.
Okay, so did you make that a motion, Steve?
Yes.
And did you second that, Chuck?
Yes, I second that.
Hey, well, And can I just ask for clarification on the motion? Sure. Are we expressing a desire, or are we actually taking the action to create a fund?
We're not.
We were taking the action to create a fund.
Okay. I really want to be sure that we actually have that ability before we do it. I'm not sure we do.
Well, then let's just rephrase that motion, that we would like to create a fund for this money, if possible. And I will find an answer out before our next meeting as to how we do that and whether we can do that.
Okay.
So that we know that I would like to know that is our desire to do that before I go to all the effort of finding out how we do that if nobody wants to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that sounds fine. And are we talking the entire amount or just half of it?
At this point, I assume we're talking about half, but we're just talking about putting part of the or all money from the Dolan contribution in a fund versus a reserve fund. So yeah,
the reason I'm asking that too is because the board already voted once to put half of it toward income, and that the balance we would decide what to do with it later. So
and we're trying to do that. We need to determine if this fund approach versus because it is not tax dollars is the way we wish to go. And if indeed we get a positive vote, then before the next meeting, I will try and determine how we do that legally so that we can dot all the I's and cross the T's. If the board decides that they wish to go that route.
So I will amend the motion to reflect that the board wishes to establish a fund with that money. And it's technically, it's not half of the money.
It's a little less than half.
It's $10,000.
Right, correct.
Right.
Okay, so are we ready to vote on that motion?
Do it.
I assume so. John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
I'm an aye. I will try and determine how we go about that before our next meeting. Okay, voter-backed petitioned articles on the town meeting warning. I asked for some guidance from VLCT regarding this matter, and they did not get back to me or have not yet. I do not know how to proceed on this issue from a legal standpoint. And so I'm willing to listen to any discussion from the boards, but I have no answer as to the legalities of voter-backed petitions without signatures and how we would go about that and what the implications are for any other voter-backed petition that came before us that had no signatures and whether or not it had any bearing on town meeting whatsoever or town functions and what our responsibility would be to either accept or decline that petition and put it on the warning. So my thought would be that we hope that we can get some guidance before the next meeting that we have and we punt on this item. To discuss it with anyone.
It's fine. May I just speak on this for briefly, Emily?
Yeah.
Speak to the league. So there are no legal ramifications to the board. It's strictly a voluntary thing. The board can either choose to do it or not. And there are no consequences as far as I know. And I don't think VLCT would say anything different. I mean, this has always been a discretionary thing for select boards to do. This is nothing new. And the board has already voted to voluntarily place social services petitions on the warning. And I think
we voted to do that for those items that had already been funded before.
Right. So that was a narrow exception. So maybe there are still some petitioners out there, but with respect to this particular issue, which is non-social services, it is completely a voluntary choice. The board can choose to do it or not. And that's really it. There's nothing beyond that. And I don't think VLCT is going to tell you anything different, that there would be any complications to that.
My feeling at this point would be that, you know, personally, I don't want to be put in the position to have to make that decision as to whether it's, you know, a warranted, you know, or not. And I don't think that it's an impossible task for one to get signatures. I mean, the town hall is open. People are still in and out of there. There's people that are still going in the North Pomfret post office to get their mail. And with utilization of the listserv and stuff, asking those people for the petitioner's support, I don't think it's that big a task. If it's that important to the petitioner, they should be able to get 38 signatures.
I've thought about this a lot, and I don't want to be put in a position where somebody potentially could say I'm being biased or favoritism to one person or another. So I'm just going to make a motion that we do not put individuals' petitions on. And if people want to do it, they can figure out a way to get signatures, and people want to pass this, great. If not, I'm okay with that too. But that's my personal feelings on the matter.
You make that a motion, John?
That was a motion, yes.
I'll second it.
Is there any more discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Ready.
All those in favor? John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott? Oh, you're not going to vote?
I shouldn't vote, yeah.
I'm sorry, I should have remembered that.
Yep.
And I also do not want to be in the position of making a judgment call. And so I will vote in favor of the motion as well.
Okay, great, thank you.
We did the highway budget. We aren't going to talk about unpaid ambulance bills. I'm still trying to get in touch with Tim Ryder from Suicide Six. And you didn't get any input on the whatever it is, so that we can try and collect those ourselves, did you, John?
No.
Okay. So I think we have made it through the agenda, unless I've forgotten something. I'm hopeful. And so there's meeting wrap up. Select board correspondence. There were these various articles, requests up there for requests for appropriations, and also there are several outstanding driveway permits that need to be finalized. We will have to put the Cary driveway permit on the next agenda. And there was no other correspondence. Review of assignments. Cindy, what do you have on your list? You've got her muted, John.
We'll all have to unmute herself.
Cindy, you've got to unmute yourself.
I did.
Okay.
I have agenda items for the next meeting.
Okay, what have you got?
The new tree warden regulations, the Dolan Fund, winter road policy, and Cherry Driveway.
Cherry Driveway.
Cherry.
Cherry. C-A-R-E-Y.
Right.
Okay. Anything else?
It just Cynthia, we can clear this up later when we form the agenda, but it's actually not a new regulation, but I'll explain more later on the tree warden.
Okay.
Okay. So we have to come up with a next meeting to work on the budget. I don't know how many people are still left, but we're going to have to get this budget wrapped up and then the warning and stuff in a fairly short order. Do you want to have a special meeting sometime next week, or we will not have another regular meeting until 6th of January. So we could have another meeting on the 23rd of December or the 30th of December to try and get this budget finalized.
Yeah, I think we need to have a meeting next week. As much as I don't want to, we need to do it and get it done.
I don't either, but we need to get it over with.
So, and if we have a meeting on the 23rd, I would suggest that we do it just for the budget.
Good.
Yep.
Would that be agreeable to the board?
Yes.
Okay, so we will have a meeting on the 23rd at 6 o'clock, and the only agenda item will be 2022 budget.
Sounds good.
Okay. I'm looking for some kind of motion.
I'll move that we adjourn.
Don't everybody speak at once. Does anybody wish to be the second for that?
I'll second John's motion.
Are you ready for the vote? I would guess probably. All those in favor? John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. I think we're done. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.